IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. I am your host for today, Pranay Kutasthane. And today we are continuing our episode series on our latest book, India's Marathon. As you would already know that we've recently published a new edited volume based on one of our flagship projects called Understanding the Changing World Order. And the book, which is called India's Marathon, Reshaping the Post-Pandemic World Order, aims to understand how the world order is changing and what India must do about it. And we've brought together original chapters by a host of leading public intellectuals, experts, and practitioners to create a comprehensive vision for the future centered on India and for India watchers across the world. You'll find a link to the ebook in the episode description. And today we are going to discuss one of the chapters in that book, and that comes in the second section of the book, where we are discussing about the domestic reforms that India must undertake to confront the changing world order. And that chapter is by my friend Surya Prakash BS. He is a CA and a law graduate, now working in the nonprofit. He's a program director at Daksh, works on many interesting things related to judicial and political performance evaluations, and Surya is also an alumnus of Takshashila's GCPP program. So Surya, welcome to this episode.
Hi Pranay, great to be on this podcast, first time on All Things Policy, and congratulations on this publishing of this fantastic volume. Looking forward to reading all the other chapters soon.
Yes, Surya, thank you and congratulations to you as well. So now let's begin, Surya. The chapter that you have written talks about reimagining how India's government should raise money, right? So isn't there a common perception already that we are already paying so much taxes? So why is there a problem here at all? So can you tell us what is the problem in India's taxation system, first of all?
Yeah, it is very common, right, to say people, the taxation system in India is very heavy, or people are saying, why am I paying taxes? Why am I paying so much taxes, right? The problem is twofold. One is, if you see the numbers per se, India's tax to GDP ratio has been around 15-16% for quite some time now, which is much lower than what other countries are that we aspire to be, are at. It's in the late 20s or, early 30s. The ones that are lower than us are peculiar countries with geographical advantages and merely trade centers. Singapore, for example, is like 12%. Pakistan is at 10%. Not in the greatest company. So one is that the tax base itself is low, because tax by definition is only on the formal economy, people who have registered with the governments, and therefore the formal economy in the context has been low, and hopefully GST etc. will change that scenario. But over time it has been low, the formal economy has been low, and taxes on them have been low. The second aspect is this lack of a quid pro quo, right? There is no connection between taxes raised and what citizens get out of it. If you see Adam Smith's canons of taxation, this is one of the things. He has said this is not a fee for service. You cannot say, I have not got anything, so I will not pay taxes, right? But increasingly, people are realizing that taxes raised should mean something to the society. So the expectations of the citizens on the state, the state of India, right, is increasing. If you want to meet those expectations, if you want to grow up in the value chain, if you want to grow up in the economic size, then increasing your tax base, increasing your tax to GDP ratio is, you cannot get away from that problem.
Right. Thanks, Surya. I think it's quite an important problem. I also remember recently there was this paper by Devesh Kapoor on why does the Indian state fail and succeed. And he begins that paper by saying that at the heart of state building is a fiscal story, right? So just like you have a monopoly over the legitimate use of force, just like a state has a monopoly over the use of force, it also has a monopoly on the legitimate expropriation of resources, right? And that is in the form of taxes. It manifests in the form of taxes. And the fact that we are not doing well on tax suggests that there is some problem with that, us with the state being able to exercise that monopoly, right? So I'm sure we'll get into what are the problems, how do we resolve them. And at this point, I would also like to say that not just about how we want to aspire to those states and we are behind them. Even if you have a comparison with countries at our GDP, our tax GDP ratio does not, you know, is not very high even when you normalize for that. So it, again, it suggests that we are not able to somehow raise taxes in a way that is fair, in a way that is not very high, and yet it is spread over a large number of people, right? So Surya, what is the problem? One, you said that the base is low. Why is the base low? Is there, what are the things that we are actually missing out?
The two big components that miss out, that we miss out, is the agricultural economy, due to historical reasons, and possibly rightly so. At that point of time, agricultural sector was exempted from taxation. The size of the agriculture in the Indian GDP has shrunk over time, but it is still not small, right? So that is a huge contributor to the low tax base. The other thing is the size of the informal economy, which I have already mentioned, is another reason why tax base is low. I feel the other thing which we do, which doesn't get talked about too much, is this capital gains. You treat capital differently from other resources. You give a lower tax rate and a low beneficial tax treatment to capital, financial capital, right? Not the economic capital. So that has also, in my view, resulted in a low base on which you can raise taxes.
That's interesting. We'll discuss on that. So, but Surya, you've written this chapter in a volume which talks about how India should confront the world order over the next 20, 25 years, right? And how should it internally strengthen itself to confront the changes which are happening? So why is raising revenue that important from this perspective of a long-term world order scenario?
That is, I think that is the core question, right? Why is this question important if we are convinced about that? There is no doubt that Indian economy will grow. Now, what will happen when it grows is what we should now be bothered about. Do we have structures and institutions and tools in place, mechanisms in place to make sure that the growth trajectory and the direction is in the right, is benefiting all parts of the society and economy, is the question before us. Now, experience has shown that an over dependence on two taxes, one is your corporate taxes, personal income taxes, and now the GST, is not going to be sufficient. It is leading to a centralization of fiscal capacity at a level of governance which is removed from the everyday experience. So the customs duties, corporate taxes, and much of the GST goes towards the union government, which really is supposed to take care, if you look at the scheme of things constitutionally, only at, you know, the law and order, the national security, defense, right? And those grand things, the state government,
yeah, not even law and order,
not even law and order, the state. I stand corrected. So the state governments are supposed to take care of law and order, but what we have seen increasingly is that citizens need their day-to-day experience to be better, and that can be done best only by your local government. So this consolidation of fiscal powers in levels of governance that are not directly affecting your day-to-day experience is leading to a hand down of this money. There are people who go and say, okay, Bangalore, Bombay, give me money, or Belgaum, give me money. And then the state government or the union government says, okay, you are eligible for so and so, you are not meeting these conditions, so I will give you so much money. Now, that is the situation that we should prevent going forward when other parts of the country, other than the state capitals and metros, grow and start becoming part of the economic development story. Now, this is not to forget the story that happened before GST, which is most city corporations and town municipalities had the power to levy taxes called octroys or entry tax, which was a disaster, right? It started somewhere in the 70s and went on right up till 2010, 2012. Every truck which passed through a town had to pay some tax. So who will determine how much tax? What is the value of the goods passing through? All of those, rampant corruption. So we should be mindful that the ability to raise taxes was given to certain municipal corporations, etc., which did not go out very well. And therefore, we should make sure that the new mechanisms that we think of avoid those pitfalls.
Yeah, just to put it in a context of the world order, I also feel that if we want the Indian government to look at things which are related to foreign policy, defense, the core functions which are in the union list, it means that it has to concentrate on doing those things, right? And currently, the situation is union government is doing state government's and local government's job. State government is doing local government job, and local governments have no scope to do things on their own.
Right.
And we can't have a country which is confronting the world order when you have the national government busy in doing so many things, right? And you need to have this clear constitutional assignment which gets followed. An illustration, Surya, of this was, remember a couple of years ago when there was the budget statement in Karnataka state government's budget which was being read out, and I was just listening to it. The CM was actually talking about a flyover in one part of Bangalore in his speech. So it was striking that CM of a state which is 6 crore in population is talking about a flyover in a city of the state, right? I mean, that should be the job of our local government. So I think that just illustrates we don't just have an aggregate problem of collecting taxes. We also have a problem that as the governments become closer to the people, they are doing even worse at collecting taxes than the governments which are farther away from the people, right?
Yeah.
So our property tax collection is terrible. Do you have any insight on that?
This is already well documented, so these are not original insights, but just so that we have this narrative, the functions have been devolved, right? The ability to do after the 73rd, 74th amendment to the constitution, the ability to do local governance has increased, the Panchayat Raj or the urban local bodies, but that has not been commensurate or matched up with the capacity to raise revenues other than those entry tax which were just pass-through transactions. So this mismatch between powers and responsibility, you have increased their responsibility without their power to raise taxes or revenue, right? That is the mismatch that needs to be corrected over time. So the next 25 years is the opportunity for us to set that right forever.
Yeah, absolutely right. If our local governments are not stronger, then we will not be able to look at bigger, grander things, right? We'll be forever talking about union governments running drinking water schemes and Swachh Bharat Abhiyan and things like that, right? Which should be legitimately in the domain of the local
government. Absolutely, yeah.
Right. So that sets the context of why this is important. Now let's come to the solutions, Surya, and let's divide it into two parts. Like when we talk about revenues, there is non-tax revenue in the form of fees that we pay for the services, and then there is tax, right, that we have to pay regardless of the service that we get. So let's talk about the taxes first, and we'll come to the non-taxes later.
Right.
So on raising the tax to GDP ratio, What are some of the solutions that you propose?
The taxation aspect of it really is going to be dynamic, depending on which sector or how the economy really develops, matures over the next 25 years or so. I have some thoughts on the institutionalization of the tax reform itself. For example, I feel that the tax reform story in India has been very checkered. You have committees, the Raja Chelaya Committee, then the Kelkar Committee, and many other committees who have done great work to the extent we have visibility on the reports. But none of them have been adopted in toto. That we don't know why they were rejected, etc. So this process of looking at how your tax system is functioning, whether it is your income taxes or your GST, needs to be set aright, which is to say that there has to be periodicity. There has to be certainty of when and how frequently you will look at the functioning of the tax system as a whole, not just as administrators, not just from increasing the revenue perspective, but from a complete holistic perspective. And I think the Finance Commission is the right body for that. So I propose one, that the Finance Commission's terms of reference include going forward a review of the taxation system. Currently, they look at it from a collection perspective, but nothing stops this from being expanded to include a review of the taxation system. The second is that there has to be a procedure that has to be laid down on how these review mechanisms will work, right? Very empirical, data-based, interdisciplinary way of looking at a taxation system. Either you either have public finance people who look at it from a collection perspective, revenue perspective, or you have lawyers and chartered accountants who look at it very legalistically. So there has to be a midpoint. There has to be other disciplines who can be included in analyzing how the taxation system is affecting the economy and the taxpayers individually. I think the process of doing this review, along with referring it to the Finance Commission, should also be laid down very clearly. Much can be gained from such an exercise.
Right. So this is the institutional mechanisms that you talk about for improving how we raise our revenue in the form of taxes.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So in terms of specific things that are needed to change on increasing the tax collections itself, what are some of the suggestions there?
I think India's tax base, India's taxation is fairly aggressive internationally. There is no worry for me, unlike other jurisdictions which have been under the lens for Ireland and all of those things, which allow for exotic structures and unaccountable pass-throughs. India has a very, very robust mechanism for taxation of international trade. So I don't feel that there is a concern for us there. Domestically too, if you see the powers of search, seizure, review, all of these are very robust and possibly used more on the aggressive side. So I don't see any tweaking there to increase the taxation itself. In fact, it should be made more liberal. You should look at taxpayers and citizens as partners or all of those things. The need for a tax charter has come up, is being discussed. It should be made, it should be included in the statute so that it is something that I can go and ask as a right to the courts. So from a raising of revenue perspective, I think the current taxation system from the income tax side is doing good. On the GST, the scope is for two things. One is further harmonization of rates. There are people who say there should be only one rate of GST. I think that's a bit of a stretch. Maybe we will get there at some point of time. The what is possible right now is harmonization of rates. Instead of 5 or 6, it should be down to 3. Some measures have already happened over the last 6 months and further harmonization is required. The second part of that story is to include more sectors into the tax chain, the GST chain, like electricity, like fuel, right? Petrol, diesel, etc. Or bring agriculture also into it over a period of time. These are the things that can help on the GST side from increasing the tax base perspective. Customs is a different story. In a ever-changing global trade scenario, we are already seeing pushback on the China story, where due to security issues and other strategic concerns, India has raised customs duty heavily, especially on electronic components that are imported into India. So customs, I think, is also on the right track. Whether it should be raised only for certain components or whether that is leading to arbitrage is a very case-to-case specific scenario, because what we saw was while there was increasing of customs duty on electronics and mobile goods, there has been a complementary lowering of taxes and other incentives given for the supply chains to move into India, which is to encourage industries being set up in India. So I think that is also something that we should closely watch and see how the other countries invest into India and become more integrated into the India supply chain, and how India integrates itself into the global supply chain. I think we are doing good on the taxation aspect, really. It's more on the implementation aspect of it.
Right. But Surya, absolutely. Like, I am one of the strongest proponents of the fact that we should be lowering taxes. But what I meant is, you have tax, when I said tax collection, it's a product of two things, right? Tax base into tax rate. And we want, as you said in the beginning, our main problem is that our base is so low. So if we want to increase the product of base into rate, we should actually be decreasing the rates and increasing the base, because there's so much scope to increase it, right? And if we do that, our tax collections will automatically improve over time, right? So in terms of improving the base itself, right, I think on customs duties, for example, when you said increasing that will actually be harmful, right? Because you have so many of our intermediate goods come from China or other countries. And in order for India to produce locally, you need to import some of these intermediate goods. So increasing customs duties at a very high rate will actually harm Indian industry itself, right?
Correct. I mean, unless it is a very short-term strategic move, and is also done along with other measures, like how they have done, right? They've lowered corporate tax rates to 15%. Like a historic low of 15% for new industries that were set up, and and they've also given PLIs for a lot of industries that are now going to be functioning. So it is you have to see it as a whole. It can't be seen as in silos, I would feel.
Right, that's one thing. Like from a 2025 years perspective, I wanted to discuss that also with you. Just you look at tax policy right now, it is being used for so many purposes.
Yeah. Right?
So it is used for giving performance incentive. It is also used for rebates are given to us for everything, right? For donating to a political party, right, to doing, buying a house and medical insurance and all that. So I guess one big reform that would be required is just to rationalize this, right? Tax, aim of tax policy should be raise revenue at a fair rate, and then you can do a lot of redistribution, etc., on the expenditure side. You don't need a tax policy to do that, right? What do you think?
Absolutely. No, exemptions rationalization is has been announced for the last 10 years. We have seen sunsetting of many large tax exemption schemes. There's a lot of industry pushback, but in spite of that, exemptions have been phased out, and there is scope for further tax exemption rationalization, which will happen because some of the sectors themselves are going out for solar, wind power, lights, stuff like that are going through their own churn. So rationalization of exemptions is more on the income tax side. The GST has really very few exemptions. So there is little of a concern on the GST side. It's the income tax side which needs to see more rationalization, possibly even clubbing together of them so that there is no arbitrage opportunities for corporates and over smart people.
Yeah, Surya, there's one more point you mentioned in the chapter about improving tax administration, about separating tax policy formulation from the implementation. So what is this solution about? What is it trying to solve?
Yeah, no, this is a recommendation from the Shom committee report that was brought out 4, 5, or 6, 7 years back. It was called as the Tax Administration Reform Committee Report, an excellent series of reports drawing from international experience and after a lot of consultation. And anybody who's interested in tax reform in India should definitely read these reports. And one of the big things that they call for is institutional change from a tax administration perspective. You have to identify, or rather you have to realize, the inherent conflict in the structure. There is a tax person who is supposed to tell you, which is known as an assessment, or internationally it's an audit, right? You say, okay, this is your tax return. You have calculated tax properly. Excellent. Go home. That same person in India is also responsible for collecting more taxes. So it's like a judge who is trying to convict people because he is being incentivized to say more people have committed a crime. So it's the police and the judge sitting in the same position, for simplicity purposes. So the conflict in Indian tax structure is that the persons who are responsible for framing the laws, for administering it, and for policy formulation, administering it, collecting it, and policy formulation, if you look at it as a cycle, are the same person, the same team of people. So that this Shom committee report rightfully says there should be a separation of these powers and duties, so that there is no inherent conflict of the persons setting laws also being responsible for increasing tax collection overall. This is a conflict that is there in most regulators. SEBI has it, RBI has it. Increasingly, we are seeing it on technology fronts, technology regulators, TRAI. So recognizing this in tax is a new thing. To see tax as one more sovereign function, which is expropriating your private property, and therefore it needs to be regulated properly, is something that we need to be increasingly aware of. And this separation is, I think, very much required for the long-term health of the tax administration of the country.
Right. Thanks. Yeah, I think it is a general policy reform about separating steering functions from the ruling ones. And I think this sort of fits very nicely into that. Okay, Surya, so these are some of the things you spoke about on things we can do on the tax revenue side. Now, let's come to the non-tax revenues. Why are non-tax revenues important, and what are the things that we can do there?
Non-tax revenues is where I think this chapter is really pushing the agenda, where I put forth, not again, this is drawing from literature already extant, but putting together a story. Some excellent papers by Govind Rao, Dr. Govind Rao, and Dr. Bird from World Bank on this topic. So non-tax receipts are, receipts for services rendered. It could be fees for land registration. It could be business registration, your ongoing company license renewal, your trade license with BMP or, other municipal corporations. So therefore, this non-tax revenues play a significant role, can play a significant role in reimagining how governments get money to run or supposed to do what they want. For the lowest level of government, or the most immediate level of government, if we can call it that, from our everyday experience, we want them to give us services. We want them to enable an environment which is suitable for businesses, citizens, and for different types of people. Now, basically, there the quid pro quo can be very strong, should be very strong. And therefore, what is suggested is that it's not really a tax, right? Because municipal taxes are also there. We are saying go beyond municipal taxes because at the local level of governance, these government bodies, this level of government can actually be held accountable for what they give you. Are they picking up garbage? Are they, you know, able to give you clean water, tap water? Are the parks clean? Are the roads, properly tarred? Is the sewerage good, right? So it is possible to hold these this level of government accountable for these immediate infrastructure immediately, perceptible to me, and infrastructure to be viewed broadly. So what we propose in this chapter is to say that there should be a fees for these services, which is not subsumed in the municipal taxes. There will still be some overheads and the, governance costs. But for these, providing these infrastructure and services, you really need to start charging fees. There are some things that we need to keep in mind while implementing that. We can come to it in the next stage. But that is really the dramatic, bold idea that is suggested in this chapter, that go beyond relying on income tax and GST and handing them down to local government and then they, calling for an L1 tender and, selecting a contractor and then building flyover, etc. Avoid doing that. Allow these infrastructure and services of provisioning of public goods, as it is called economically, right, in public finance. Provisioning of public goods, allow them to charge fees for it, and that can then be a game changer is what is suggested in this chapter.
Right, and some of these are not just public goods, right? They are private goods. For example, occupy a place on the road, on the curbside, and you park your car there, it is a private good that you've appropriated for that particular amount of time, right? You have taken a land away from the, which was available to the public, right? So in a sense, even things like if you have water coming to your house, that is a private good, right? So there are things which are private goods and the state is providing you, local government, so there should be charges for that will help you to sort of provide these services better. And I think, Surya, you also mentioned about this idea of local governments being connected and that the consequences of their performances are very visible, right? So, for example, this is an idea about that Richard Burr talks about on the Wickselian connections, that there should be maximum overlap between those who decide, those who benefit, and those who pay. And that is something which can happen in the case of local governments, right? And that's why if you increase service charges, it will help in increasing this overlap of these three circles.
Absolutely. Yeah. I refer to that in my chapter 2. Yes.
Absolutely. Great. So that is what we can do on non-tax revenue. A last question, Surya, that you had written this chapter before COVID-19, right? And now that COVID-19 has happened, is there anything that changes? Is there anything that, any part that should be looked at more in a focused way? So, for example, I think definitely non-tax revenue is one thing. You already see local governments, for example, in Bangalore, you have MG Road, which is now parking is taxed, right? So you have non-tax revenues. Not tax, I mean, you are paying fees there, which was free earlier. So that has sort of become one way to raise revenue rather than taxes. So do you see similar changes happening because of COVID-19?
Before I answer the COVID, I think it is important to also highlight two things that are necessary for not ensuring that the state monopoly is abused in this process of charging fees, right? Allowing for regulatory competitiveness, which is to say that charging parking fees from MG Road as a very simple example, or advertising revenue, right? If you allow for people to compete in generating advertising revenue or charging parking fees, then it will prevent capture it will prevent abuse of monopoly. I think allowing for these regulators and governance service providers, public goods service providers to compete can solve some of the problems. And again, this is not uniform. It will depend on the nature of the goods and the services. The other is to also have social, and this is where the COVID connection comes in. This is to say that you also prevent people from freeloading, not just through pricing mechanisms, but also through social, messaging. Encourage people to be part of people who pay for services, provide support to people through a different mechanism for people who cannot afford these, and also shame and name people who don't do it. Those are, again, strategies that will need to be very local and specific for kinds of services and kinds of culture in which these are being rendered. For COVID, public health has taken over the narrative completely in India from a governance and state capacity perspective. So using technology or just ramping up public health capacity of the state, I don't know whether there can be a charging mechanism for it or whether this should be seen as an opportunity to increase revenue. But once the vaccine is in and there is a stabilization amongst the population of the use of this vaccine, post that, clearly public health and safety and sanitation should take priority, although I don't see that as a revenue opportunity, Pranay.
Right. So let's go to the last question, Surya. So you said that some of these things like social services, etc., will still have to be provided for, and that should not be looked at the non-tax revenue opportunity. Are there any other things that change, let's say taxation and GST? How do you see that playing out because of COVID-19?
Yes, I think post-COVID will present its challenges to the taxation system of the country. With the economy contracting, the number of transactions going down, we are most likely and definitely going to see a fall in tax collection, a natural almost consequence of that. So as to maintain the revenue size and meet their expenditures, tax systems are likely to go aggressive on current tax payers, try to extract more from the same pool and from the same base. So there are two ways in which this could be tackled. You can increase the tax base, which is to tax more transactions, which in the case of GST really, in the country, there is not much left which is not taxed for you to increase the tax base. In income tax, maybe other sources like agricultural income or derived from agriculture can be looked at more aggressively to include in the taxation scheme of things. Or the classic solution is decrease the tax rate so that more people will feel incentivized enough to pay more taxes. I don't know how much of that is true in the Indian context and whether a further reduction of taxes is required or rather warranted in this current scenario when resources of the government needs to be increased, state capacity needs to be increased to deliver other functions that are going down. My suggestion would be to make the switch from an informal enterprise to a formal enterprise. And that is going beyond the taxation system because people choose to remain informal only because of other, negative aspects of the regulatory mechanism like harassment or delays it's just plain complication. If we can look at the larger regulatory and compliance rules and make them simpler, then more informal business transactions will start becoming formal, and that will lead over a period of time to increasing the tax base of the Indian economy.
Right. Thank you so much, Surya, for this insightful contribution. And you tried to present in very simple terms about how tax revenues and non-tax revenues are really critical for India to even confront changes in the world order. And the idea that we need our local governments to be more independent in how they raise revenue is also important. That's one. And only then can we have our state and union governments doing much more broader and much more ambitious things. So on that note, I will end this episode. Thank you, Surya. And please do check the book out on Amazon and let us know how you feel about it.
Thanks so much, Manai.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.